And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Here at Quark's, customer satisfaction is our primary concern.
I'd say we just found our way into a wormhole.
I'm Kira Nerys.
Lieutenant Commander Worf, reporting for duty, sir.
You're the best crew any captain ever had. This may be the last time we're all together.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
It is quite simply, Commander. The journey you have always been destined to take.
Sensors are not functioning.
We've lost all contact with the space station.
What the hell is happening out there?
Shields up. Damage report.
Battle stations.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Listen to the prophets. A Deep Space Nine Two True Freaks presentation with Sean Engel and Andrew Layla.
And now with 100% more Paul Spataro.
Hello, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, or good night, whenever you're listening. And welcome to Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast in which myself, along with Andrew Leyland and Sean Engel.
Hello.
We'll be reviewing episode by episode the vastly underrated Star Trek series, Deep Space Nine. Anyone who was listening last week might question my thoughts about underrated, but we're getting back into some normal episodes now, and I think we're back to being underrated. So today we will be reviewing the episode Sanctuary, which is episode number 10 from season 2, as we basically power our way through the series, because I can't believe we're this far along already. But in the meanwhile, does anybody have any Star Trek news? Anything at all?
I got nothing.
Nope.
I think you got to add some cricket sound effect there.
Yeah, I've got the cricket sound effect handy. That'll definitely go. You might have to build a soundboard because, you know, eventually we're going to have to be interjecting the cricket effects. And, if I actually listen to the show and edit it properly, I'll sometimes, if I catch a mistake that I'm doing, I'll put the computerized voice in to correct me. So,
yeah, I think we need to come up with a name for her.
I'm trying to think. The site that I go to names her Rachel, but I don't know if that's an appropriate name or if that name works, you know, whatever.
Oh, it works all right. Far more effectively than you do on any given show.
That's okay with me.
Okay. So Rachel is our computer voice. There you go.
I kind of like when it's like, Paul wasn't thinking that it's really this. I always get a kick when that pops up. So you wouldn't know anything about this, Andy, because you don't.
I would not know anything about Rachel.
See, Andy doesn't realize that, you know, underneath all his dialogue, I'm inserting violent flatulent sounds. So, but he'll never know that that's happening because he never listens to any of these shows. You know, no. Anyone who ever encounters Andy is going to go, man, he must have some irritable bowel syndrome, really bad. So.
I just don't understand the raving egomania that leads you to listen to yourself when you don't have to.
We've discussed it before. It's not raving. It's just egomania.
part of it is by the time they post, I don't remember what we said. Secondly, it's less egomania and more fear of sounding like an idiot.
Yeah, that's kind of me as well. I usually listen to it, and I'm shocked sometimes when I actually come across as coherent and, you know, having intelligent things to say. Because, you know, in general in my life, that's not the case. So when I can come across on the show, especially when we're doing the shows, if I can come across with some sort of cogent argument or statement, I consider that, you know, in the win column for me. So
it's really nice to have a forum too, where people pretend that they care what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have that at home.
Yeah, same here. I'm lucky if anyone will listen to anything I'm saying. Oh, have you seen the new Flash show? Do I know you? Why did I marry you? Never mind.
I'll just Gorilla go off Grodd quietly was awesome, again. What's that, Andy?
Gorilla Grodd was awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, by the time this airs, Flash will probably already be done, and we will have seen the final episode of the season. You know, since we don't have Star Trek stuff to talk about, and we want to talk a little comic book stuff, a little comic book TV show, there has been some interesting things on the, you know, the new Supergirl sort of sizzle reel came out.
I thought that looked pretty cool.
I agree.
I thought it looked entertaining.
I think they're taking a bit of a divergence. Relationship to the comic book series, but I think they're moving away from the sort of
sorry, Rachel's going to interrupt here and say Sean meant convergence.
Actually, I have no clue what Sean was trying to say. My guess is he was just rambling on like the idiot that he always is.
It's
you'll
early.
Have to listen, Andy, to find out.
Yeah, you'll never know, will you?
I will never know, no.
Bastard. But they're diverging from the idea of the Arrow show and the sort of dark feel of it, and they're going for light and bubbly and everything. And they're even diverging from the feel of the Man of Steel and the Batman versus Superman movie. You know, the Supergirl thing looks a heck of a lot of fun. You know, I'm surprised, and they're even referencing a lot of stuff in the DC universe from like the pre-crisis, or not the pre-crisis time, but the post-crisis time. They reference the DEO, the Department of Extra-Normal Affairs. You know, they mentioned that Superman has been around and that Kara's his cousin. You know, they've changed a few things about Jimmy Olsen and Cat Grant and all this, but it looks like a fun show, and I'm actually looking forward to it.
From a tone point of view, just based on the trailer, I see it as more similar in tone to iZombie than any other comic show that's on TV right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, it seems to have that tongue-in-cheek delivery on a lot of things, but that it's going to be able to, you know, to have some fairly serious action sequences in it. It looks like they're stepping up the special effects over, you know, when Superman has been on television in the past, I guess most recently Smallville, you know, it definitely looks like a step above that special effects wise. So, you know, I'm engaged. I'm interested in seeing it.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that tone. If it can achieve anywhere near as good as the first season of Veronica Mars or the first three seasons of Buffy, fair play to it. Go for it.
Mm-hmm. Now,
and you know, with that said, I'm a little behind. I'm about three episodes behind right now, but I'm enjoying iZombie. I think it's a very engaging show.
Yeah, iZombie is really interesting. That it's got the zombie aspect of it. You've got the sort of season long plot of what's going on with the zombies and the kids being abducted from the skate park. But if you just tune in and watch individual episodes, it's essentially, you know, just a police procedural. You know, you've got a sort of one and done police drama going on, plus the ongoing evolution of Liv's character and the dealing with the zombieism and all that. I'm quite impressed with how iZombie is turning out as well.
I enjoy iZombie. I think it's good fun.
So yeah, we're really in, you know, a lot of people have said this, we're really in sort of a golden age of comic book movies and TV. I mean, the spate of stuff that's coming out for the Marvel Universe, for the DC Universe, the DC shows, Agent Carter's being renewed for a second season. You know,
yay!
Well, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, I read somewhere they had this big list of all the shows that are in development or being filmed right now or whatever, and Agent Carter is getting a second season. I know Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is getting a third one.
Hayley Atwell just tweeted a picture of her and the writers in the writers' room.
Good.
Looking on second season.
On the one hand, I've been hoping that they would renew the show, and I've actually enjoyed that I enjoyed that miniseries, for lack of a better word, than I have Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't sit here and say, oh, I wish they had done more episodes this season, because I think they made this season the perfect length for the storyline they had, and if they had padded it out more, I don't think I would have enjoyed it as much.
No, I think that it was 8 episodes and done, and they showed it consecutively, helped it immeasurably. And it seems like the second season is going to be the same thing. It's going to be
that's what I'd say. Just do more of the same.
Yeah, it's going to be that they're going to drop it in between S.H.I.E.L.D. episodes again. Because
S.H.I.E.L.D. consistently feels to me like they're just passing time.
Yeah, I was just going to say the same thing. Of all the ones that are on at the moment, S.H.I.E.L.D. is easily the most expendable.
Yeah, unfortunately, S.H.I.E.L.D. is the one that I've had build up on my DVR. I think I've got like 8 or so episodes. I don't think I've watched. I watched the first episode when they came back from the season, and then I've just let it build up. I mean, I've tried to keep up with iZombie, with Flash. Arrow's been out for me because I want to watch it from the beginning, so I don't want to jump in season 3, even though I probably could anyway. I liked Constantine, but Constantine's out because NBC are idiots. I haven't really watched Gotham, and sadly that's just because I'm kind of Batmaned out, you know, and a Batman show without Batman and all the characters, and I think we've discussed this before either on air or off air, that a Batman show where all the characters sort of come together without any real, and they're all fully formed before Batman gets there is just kind of silly.
Boneheaded.
Yes.
I think is the word you're looking for.
I'll agree with that.
The whole thing that they play with in the Batman comic books is that Batman being there creates this higher level of criminal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an interesting thing to play with. He shows up, regular criminals are like, oh shit, what do we do now? And suddenly you start getting the Joker and the Riddler. If they're all in play before Batman shows up. And it's such a shame because it's got such a good cast.
Mm-hmm.
But I just can't get past the idea that it was hyped as being Gotham Central, but it isn't. The idea behind Gotham Central is a great one. How do real police do their job in a world where Batman and all these wacky rogues exist? But that's not the case in Gotham, because there's no Batman.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you have kind of a wussy young Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I think Sean Pertwee's brilliant as Alfred, but I've only watched 2 or 3 of them before I thought, I don't need to watch this. I've got The Flash, I've got Arrow, you know, I've got Constantine. I know Batman's beginnings. I've read them multiple times in the comics. I don't need to watch them again.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have next year around this time, we're going to have Legends of Tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
did
that
you see that trailer as well?
Oh, that looked fantastic.
I love that Arthur Darvill's coming back as Rip Hunter, that he's a time traveler. I think that's for me being a Doctor Who fan, that's kind of fun.
That's inspired casting.
It looks like they're going to be, now this looks like it will probably follow more the sort of miniseries or extended miniseries role that Agent Carter did. I think they've only got it for 13 episodes, and it's going to be one long form 13 episode thing, but I'm looking forward to it. I think it looks neat. And they showed a little bit of, the Atom actually shrinking down, which I think was kind of cool as well.
That's what made it for me, because I've been saying, as I've been watching Arrow, I keep saying, but he's not the Atom. He's basically Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want that. I want Ray Palmer to be the Atom. So they're going to finally get to him actually being the Atom, which I like. I think that, you know, they will have their work cut out with them, because they are working with a large ensemble cast here. And if they don't come up with a quality script that gives everybody a chance to shine a little bit, you know, it could be a tremendous failure ultimately, despite our excitement for it. So, I have somewhat muted expectations only because I want to see what they actually do. But just from the trailer itself, it looked very exciting and a lot of fun. I hope they live up to that.
Yeah, I thought that trailer looked great. I really did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It just, I'm talking from the long story long form narrative aspect of it, that if it's, you know, if it's not well written, it could crash and burn.
Mm.
And that's just, you know, it's not a fear. It's just, I'm hoping that that's not the case. And I don't want that to happen. I'm not predicting it. I'm just saying, you know, they really do have to work at getting the right script for this kind of cast.
And with 13-hour-long episodes, they've got longer to develop it than a 2-hour film. So I'm quite optimistic for it. Mm-hmm. When it started with Arrow, and Arrow's first season was very hit and miss, but it's now given us the Flash and this Legends of Tomorrow thing. DC's TV stuff shaking up pretty nicely. But Marvel's got Daredevil. I've no reason to believe Jessica Jones won't be any good. I'm really looking forward to Luke Cage, because I like Luke Cage a great deal. And it's going to be interesting to see how they do Iron Fist. So essentially they're taking two characters whose roots are pure 70s and bringing them into now. And it's going to be really interesting to see how it works. But that being said, both of those comics that introduced Luke Cage and Danny Rand, you could film them. You could film them with very little problem. They're very cinematic comic books, and put them on screen and they'd work.
I would have so loved for a Luke Cage show to be sort of a 1970s throwback, sort of almost blaxploitation show. That would have been, if they could have done that and just set it in that era, that would have been wonderful. But I know they're trying to combine it and get the Defenders thing going, so they kind of have to set it in the modern era with Daredevil and Jessica Jones and everything. But I'm looking forward to that as well. I don't know if you've seen it. Just recently, I think they released the first photo from the AMC Preacher series that they're coming up. And since you're a big fan of that, Andy, and I actually just finished reading that a while back, and I thoroughly love the series. I'm wondering what your thoughts on AMC trying to tackle that is.
It's going to be very interesting how controversial they want to get, isn't it? I mean, it seems a little bit tame nowadays, but the entire theme of Preacher, the whole religion theory, the whole God's abandoned heaven thing, it's going to be interesting to see if they can pull that off. I mean, Supernatural kind of has done that a little bit, but not to the extent that Preacher delves into it.
No.
So I'm interested in seeing what they do with it. They're updating Arseface, so he's not a grunge fan. He's going to be a hip hop fan or something.
Yeah, I didn't see. They had a photo of, I think, Dominic Cooper is going to be the main character, and I don't know who's playing Arseface or Arseface. I can't pronounce it the way that you so eloquently do. Arseface.
Yeah, but an Irish accent. Arse.
But yeah, he didn't seem to have
that
any.
That was an support. Irish accent.
Sure.
Arse. Feck.
But they didn't have anything. They didn't have anything. They didn't have anything with the vampire character. Like I said, Dominic Cooper is playing Jesse Custer. You know, the fact that Seth Rogen is behind it, it gives me pause, because I'm certain that he's a big comic book fan and that he could probably pull it off. But yeah, bring something that controversial to TV, even though you're doing it on AMC, which is known for doing The Walking Dead and Mad Men and Breaking Bad, it's gonna be hard for them to do it. But you know, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see how it pans out. It could be really good, or it could be really bad, or it could be absolutely nothing to do with the comic.
True.
iZombie has very little to do with the comic, but it's a good show.
Well, and I think getting the guy who was behind Rob Thomas, the guy who was behind Veronica Mars writing it, you know, was probably a godsend for that, because he's got a really interesting writing style, and I'm certain, you know, talking to people who are fans of Veronica Mars, it seems that the writing style from that show sort of translates over to this show, and the dialogue and the characterizations are somewhat similar.
They definitely share the same DNA.
But yeah, we didn't have much to talk about Star Trek, do we? Do we want to segue into the show?
Maybe we should talk about the episode of Star Trek.
I guess we should.
Kira befriends a ship of alien refugees.
They're experiencing their first taste of freedom.
They're on a desperate search for their birthright.
Kentana is the legendary home of the Skeens.
A search that leads to Bajor.
Kentana is your planet.
Now Kira's torn between their people and her own.
Bajor simply cannot absorb 3 million refugees.
I thought we were welcome here.
On the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
I guess. No, actually, I shouldn't be so reticent, because I like this episode, and get to that right off the bat. And we actually have a guest star turn from Andrew Koenig, Walter Koenig's son. But this is season 2, episode 10, of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Sanctuary. The teleplay is by Frederick Rappaport. The story is by Gabe Esso and Kelly Miles. And we have guest starring Deborah May, William Shallert of Patty Duke fame, Andrew Koenig, Michael Durrell, Betty Maguire, Robin Curtis Brown. Just, you know, big cast here. Anyway, a damaged vessel comes through the wormhole, and its passengers are transported aboard Deep Space Nine. They are from a race called the Skrees, but their language is difficult for the Universal Translator to understand. However, they seem to trust Kira, who escorts them around the station. The female Skree and her three companions have a hard time adjusting to rules and regulations at first, but the Universal Translator eventually translates their language and enables them to communicate. The female reveals that her name is Hanik, and her people's homeworld was destroyed by a species called the T-Rogarans. Sisko promises to help Hanik and her people find a new homeland, and when several more Skreean ships come through the wormhole, they are welcomed warmly. Kira buys a dress for Hanik that Hanik seemed to be admiring when the Universal Translator was not yet functioning. However, Hanik was not admiring it. She thought it was the ugliest dress she had ever seen, an opinion Kira shares. The two laugh and appear to become friends. As more and more Skreeans arrive at the station, Hanik begins to fear that she will not find Kentana, the Skreeans' long-sought homeworld. However, the Skreean leaders decide that they have already found Kentana in Bajor. Sisko suggests a nearby planet, Draylon 2, as a reasonable alternative, but the Skreeans are adamant in their decision. They meet with representatives of the Bajoran government, who refuse to allow them to relocate there. A famine is spreading, and the Bajoran government does not believe it can support the Skreean population. Tumak, Hanik's son, takes one of the Skreean ships and heads to Bajor. At Sisko's request, Hanik tries to convince him to disengage his engines. Not in the least, because the ship has a dangerous radiation leak. Two Bajoran vessels approach him and also try to get him to shut down his engines, so they can tow him to safety. However, Tumak refuses to shut down his engines. A firefight ensues, resulting in the destruction of Tumak's ship due to the radiation leak. The Bajoran government stays with its decision to refuse asylum, so the Skreeans have no choice but to move to Draylon 2 after all. Hurt over her son's death and angry with the Bajorans, her final words to Kira are bitter. She reminds Kira that the Skreeans were farmers and could have helped Bajor overcome the famine. Hanik then leaves with her people. I thought this was a really solid episode. We have a little reference to the Dominion in here, which is a little bit of world building. The fact that the Universal Translator wasn't able to translate the language immediately created for some interesting circumstances. Just overall, you know, a lot of stuff going on here. The relationship between, what's her name? What's her name? the main leader there. Where are we? Hanik.
Varani.
Who?
No, sorry.
Varani is William Shallert, who's sitting there playing music.
Yeah, that's William Shallert.
We had a really good mourn scene there. Just overall, a lot of thoughts, you know, a lot of concepts thrown about that just made this a really solid episode, in my opinion. I thought the acting was top notch. The writing was really good. Everybody's point of view seems understandable and just thought provoking. And I'm curious to hear what you guys have to say.
Go ahead, Andy.
It's clearly about immigration, isn't it?
Did you get it?
As Paul has pointed out many times before, when Star Trek does something, it doesn't do it subtly. And I thought this one was okay. I like that there's a big role for Kira. I'm always a big fan of episodes that feature a lot of Kira Nerys. Michael Durrell's also in it. He was in V. And William Shallert was in The Trouble with Tribbles.
Yep.
So it's nice to have a guest appearance from somebody who's in the original show. So he'll end up being in this again as his character from Tribbles at some future point down the line. I thought the ending didn't work. because the Bajoran ministerial government are actually laying out some very good reasons for not taking to the planet, and Kira agrees with them. So when was the last time Kira agreed with the provisional government? So if Kira's actually agreeing with them, they must be, you know, they must be talking sense for once. So that, I didn't really feel that, it felt to me like they did a controversial ending for the sake of doing a controversial ending, and the ending didn't really work that well, because it becomes a running joke throughout the episode that Sisko keeps saying, Drelon 2. Drelon 2 would be a really good place for you to go. There's always Drelon 2, and it just seems on paper, Drelon 2 is a far better place for them to make their home. And they just seem to be really, really stubborn in demanding that it be Bajor. So I didn't think the ending came together as well as it should do, and I thought the allegory was a bit on your head, immigration. Immigrants can bring as much to your culture as well as take away. Did you get that message? So it was okay, it was alright, it was entertaining, the acting was all well done, and I love Akira episode, but it wasn't a great episode.
Yeah, to kind of disagree with you at all, you know, I think I'm kind of in line with Andy. I thought it was a good episode. I thought it did hammer you over the head with the whole idea of this is an episode about immigration. We're talking about this. And at the time, this was coming out, I think Proposition 187 was being bandied around over in California that was going to, sort of limit immigration or had something to do with that. So I don't know whether this was DS9 at the time being prescient again or not. I thought at times that the writing felt a little stilted. A lot of times there were things that the characters would say that another character would have to pipe up and explain what was going on. Like when the leader Hannick was telling about she came through the eye of the universe, you had to have Odo behind that saying, I think she's talking about the wormhole. Yes, we get it. The eye of the universe.
It's like Rachel.
Hey, don't compare me to those poorly written characters on the show. I've got the intelligence of the entire internet behind me.
Yeah, exactly. she's, you know, there were people fixing their mistakes in the show as well. And plus the scene where she's talking to the people in Ops, it was just basically like, well, I'm doing this. Oh, what is that about? As the character that. So I thought the writing in some of those scenes were kind of poor.
See, I didn't feel that it hit us over the head with the immigration quite as much as it could have. I thought it was presenting it as a legitimate problem that could occur, that, you know, they are right outside this wormhole. And, you know, if all of a sudden a large group came out and said, well, you know, we're tired and this is where we want to stay kind of thing, how could Bajor handle that? Or how would the Federation handle that? And yeah, I know, I mean, I know there's the correlation to immigration and all, but, I thought it was presented in a more science fiction kind of way. I didn't, you know, I'm not saying it's subtle. Star Trek rarely is, but I do think that it, you know, that it kind of got its point across without necessarily being too preachy about it. And I liked, you know, you do see it coming a mile away when she says, you know, that they're looking for this homeworld that their culture preaches of or whatever, and you know immediately that they're gonna fixate on Bajor. But I still thought it was done fairly well, and I liked the clash of opinions where I kind of feel like everybody kind of had a valid opinion. I liked that the ending was kind of downbeat and you know, it didn't just, you know, all tie together that everybody's happy now. You know, it's like, oh, you know, yeah, my son's ship just exploded. Let's all hold hands and sing Kumbaya. You know, there was none of that going on.
Well, but the reason for him going to the Bajor was kind of telegraphed with the idea that this is their supposed mystical Shangri-La planet that they're supposed to go to. And it was seeded with his disobedience throughout the entirety of the show. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that it's a bad ending, but it seems sort of pat. It seems sort of that it was put in there to make you feel upset for these people being displaced when the Federation and Bajor did have legitimate reasons for them not being there. You know, and that they gave them every other out to find a different place, and you had to have this negative ending to show that they couldn't be in the place where their legends or religious ideals would have them go. So.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with anything you guys have said. I think it's, it may be just kind of a case of your mileage may vary, and I enjoyed it more and was not, taken out of it by the, you know, what negatives do exist in it. Maybe it's that the last episode, Second Sight, was so bad that it just made me so happy to see one that wasn't that bad. But you know, I really did end up enjoying this. And just to go back to it again, I think this just had a great mourn scene where William Shalit's playing the music and everybody's mesmerized by it. And he's actually got a tear coming down because he's so moved by the music that Quark has to give him a towel to wipe it with. But at the end of that scene, as the camera's panning by him, there's a Federation woman behind him. And she comes up and kind of hugs him from behind because she's so moved by the music. And it just adds to the legend of Morn. And
that just shows that Morn's a pimp.
I thought Morn and her were dating, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of what I got from it there, that Morn was in some sort of...
Morn is a player, though. He's not dating one woman.
Well, based on what Jadzia said a couple of episodes ago, that's, you know, totally plausible that that's what he's doing.
I think he was
dating her in this episode. I don't think we're going to see a future, you know, spin-off with Morn and his Federation wife.
Maybe he just likes Federation women.
No, I think Morn just likes women.
I think Federation women like Morn. That's what I'm thinking.
I think so too.
Again, it's a play. I thought the acting, and in particular, Nana Visitor, I thought was well done. I really enjoyed it. I found her, it reminded me a lot of ways of the episode with Brian Keith and how she was torn between her loyalty to an individual person and her loyalty to, for lack of a better term, the greater good.
Yeah, that's a good parallel there. I think Kira was also helped by sort of lackluster performances by some of the rest of the cast. I again go back to the scene in Ops where Haneker is talking, or the leader of the Scree are talking about, you know, how they have a female run government or a female run society because the males are too emotional, and the just sort of the lines that O'Brien and Bashir are delivering are just kind of lame during that sequence. You know, I get it. You know, they're a female run society, and you know, the Federation is still somewhat patriarchal. So there's a difference, but
are you saying that Frank Gorshin is black on the right and white on the right?
I'm essentially saying yes. Frank Gorshin is black on one side and white on the other.
What did you think of them drawing attention to the universal translator?
I like that. I actually, that was one of the things I like. If there's one thing you can say about Enterprise that was kind of nice, is that they couldn't always just go in and start talking to people or alien races just right off and be able to translate everything perfectly. You had, what's her name? Hoshi? Try and work out the syntax and everything. The computers weren't getting it as right. So I like the fact you got a species of aliens from however many 70,000 light years away that don't immediately click with the computer. I like that. That showed that, and plus it also shows that this isn't necessarily a Federation station. Maybe the Cardassians didn't design their computers to do that, so it's taking a little bit more time. Maybe they've got like Windows 95.
Yeah, I can't see the Cardassians being too bothered about communication.
I thought this was going to turn into a Darmok episode where that was going to be the focus of the episode, was just trying to communicate with these people. But I thought they did a good job of having that be the starting point, having them have to develop relationships without being able to communicate verbally, but then eliminating that, having the translators, you know, eventually pick up on the language as they hear more, as it gets more of it, and then, you know, working from there. I thought that was kind of, you know, just done enough. If the whole episode had been the communication problem, I think it would have, you know, gotten boring after about 20 minutes to half an hour because, you know, it's been there, done that.
Yeah. I do wish that they could do something where the lip movements would be out of sync with the dialogue. That would be neat, but it'd just be too problematic for them, the aliens who are speaking a different language, to have their lips synced, you know, to make it look sort of like a dubbed Japanese movie. But, you know, it was interesting. I like the fact that technology is fallible in the future as well.
And it still makes me more intrigued again. Who is this Dominion, and are we going to see them? A little foreboding.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know that
Mention of the Dominion. Because if you assume that Quark is the first person who heard about them, the way they all looked at each other then, that was kind of like, it was one of those knowing glances. So do you think Quark fed back to them about his encounter with the Dominion?
I don't know if Quark has mentioned anything to anyone, or saying about him mentioning to anyone in the station about the Dominion, or whether he just kept it with...
Yeah, by the way, while I was in the Gamma Quadrant...
I don't know, simply because, you know, the Dominion, or the relationship with the Dominion was to gain profit for the Negus and himself, he may not have. But, you know, the way that episode turned out, he didn't really gain any profit because, you know, he was collaborating with a female. So, you know, he could have mentioned something to Odo, but it doesn't seem like they specifically come out and say that Quark has divulged all this information about the Dominion to people on the station.
And it's not like he has to report his activities to Sisko, not being a part of Starfleet.
No.
So I was wondering whether this was the first time they'd heard of them, if Quark's not fed back to them. The Quark subplot with Jake and Nog was one of the best bits about the episode. I really like Nog in this one because he's a proper child. He teases people and gets on people's nerves and gets in trouble. And you know when he's arrested, for want of a better word, by Odo, and Quark goes to pull him out, you know he's not going to get punished.
Oh, of course not.
Quark doesn't care.
Well, you know, they made that pretty obviously plain in that episode, in that scene, where Quark was like, and he will be punished, say you're sorry, I'm sorry, and you go, can I go? And he gestures to Odo, and Odo says, goodbye, and you know that after that, nothing is going to happen to him.
Yeah, it's again, I liked it. I'm sorry.
Well,
I felt the ending didn't earn its ending as much as I would have liked it to. It's like they wanted to go for a controversial, thought-provoking ending that didn't really work because they didn't really make an effort to argue why they had to go to Bajor. There's a perfectly good planet there that's empty, that you can go and you can own the entire planet. You don't have to share it with the Bajorans. And I don't think they earned the controversial ending. I liked all the stuff with Jake and Nog. I thought that was all brilliant stuff. And there's some really good comedy with Odo and Quark.
I think their reasoning why they felt they had to go to Bajor was that, as far as they were concerned, this was their religious promised land. And, you know, that's what they came through the wormhole looking for, this promised land.
I don't think they did a good enough job of explaining that. That seemed to me that it came in halfway through the episode with more emphasis than perhaps it should have had at the beginning. If they'd come through the eye in the sky saying, we're looking for the promised land and we believe it's here and it's there, and they'd gone through the entire episode going, Bajor is the promised land, I'd have bought it more. But it felt like that was put in midway through the script, or not played up enough in the early parts of the script to make the payoff at the end satisfying. For me. Anyway, if it worked for you, it worked.
Yeah.
If you're stupid enough to have worked for you, good for you.
That's not what I meant.
No,
that's what I heard. I don't know.
Fine, then.
opinions are opinions. Everyone's allowed to have them, and they're allowed to be different, and we're allowed to be respectful of them. So
I know. I totally agree that you and Andy are allowed to be wrong whenever you want.
Well, I wonder what Gene Hendrix is doing next Saturday. We'll have to see if he wants to come on the show.
Perhaps Gene wants to come over to the barbecue after Eternal Con and not be cut out.
Oh, you bitter, bitter bat. Just because we can't make it up to it, just because Andy can't fly across the Atlantic Ocean and I can't travel, a couple of thousand miles from Oklahoma, you're going to be all poopy since we're not going to make Eternal Con.
Maybe Gene can ferry across the Mersey.
Maybe we should have all got together just to do a live one of these.
I would love it.
We could do it as a commentary, all in the same room.
That works for me.
Then we could have listen to the Prophets Fight Club.
Who would we have? We could have Garrick versus Kang. Something like that. I don't know.
It's
late or early or whatever.
It gets late early around here.
Yes.
To quote Yogi Berra, who turned 90 this week.
90 for the love of wow. He's
going
to outlive.
He's in the Stan Lee world.
He is. Okay. Well, do we have anything?
Anyway, I think we've pretty much exhausted our discussion of this one, and maybe we should rate it.
Let's do that.
Okay, I think I'm beyond what you guys are going to rate it at, and, who knows, maybe I'm not as far above you as I think, maybe I am. But considering 3 as average, considering I have yet to have a 5 episode, and I don't think this would reach that level, don't get me wrong, but I do think that it was engaging. I think that it, introduced us to some concepts without, I didn't think they were bludgeoning us over the head with them, but opinions may differ on that. Introducing us to an alien race that isn't just alien because they have a different nose ridge was a nice factor. I thought the fact that their skin is just dropping all over the place, I found that to be amusing, and it was meant to be gross, and I think it served its purposes. In fact, there was some comment about, could you imagine these people come over and then you got to clean up afterwards because they've left skin all over your living room.
Yeah, Quark was complaining about that.
But I think it was, it was different. I like it. I thought the episode was somewhat thought-provoking, and I thought the different points of view were well presented, in my opinion. So I'm giving this, I'm going to say it's a very solid episode and give it a 4.
Okay. Andy, you want to go?
I didn't think that the ending came together as well as Paul did, even though they were going for controversial. It didn't quite work as well. And we also had what will become a Deep Space Nine cliche, the space battle where we only see everyone stand around looking at a computer. That will become incredibly boring by the time we get to season 6. But for the most part, it's a solid, entertaining episode. I like the Kira relationship. Like Paul says, I like that the makeup isn't just slap a stupid nose on somebody. I'm going to go 2.5.
Okay, well, I'm going to go 1 point or a half point higher than Andy. I'm going to give it a 3. For all the same reasons. I thought it was an engaging episode. It tackles the idea of immigration in a typical Star Trek way. It's thought-provoking. The ending, I said, was a bit pat, but, they wanted to add a little drama to it. There is really nothing wrong with the episode, but it just doesn't reach the heights that, say, Duet does, or the Cardassians do, or even Necessary Evil. It's a good episode. It's far more memorable than the episode that we had last week, so thank goodness for that.
There you go.
And, of course, there was, and we did mention it, there was a Morn sighting in this, so Morn's shown up in about, he's got about a 50% rating here. This time out. Last time out, he was in every episode, I think. So, significantly less Morn, which is disappointing.
Sad.
Yes. But do we want to go ahead and do some emails?
Yeah, go on.
Incoming transmission.
All right, let me close my email real quick. I will pull this up.
Whoa.
Well, no.
Easy, cowboy.
I'm not going to pull that up, no. Thank God this isn't a video podcast. Excuse me while I whip this out. Our first email this time out comes from our good friend, Mr. Luke Giaconetti, and he writes in with, "If wishes were progress, the storyteller in The Forsaken would be Dramatis Personae." Luke always comes up with the most interesting titles. Luke says, "Prophet listeners, hey guys, I just wanted to drop you a quick line to say thanks to recent travels I've been getting caught up on Listen to the Prophets, continuing to fill in the many, many gaps in what I have never seen of Deep Space Nine." Well, you should rectify that. If you have Netflix or anything, get to it and watch along with us. I think you'll enjoy it, Luke. It's different from Voyager, but I find it as enjoyable, if not more enjoyable, than Voyager. But of course, you're a Voyager fan, and we don't begrudge you for that. So far, he says, the first season seemed to be the typical up and down of a first season science fiction show, franchise or otherwise. The storyteller and If Wishes Were Horses both seemed to be typical episodes with a sort of mark time until the quote-unquote real storylines can begin. While Progress seems like it was probably a pet project of one of the writers who really liked the idea and wanted to push it. Same goes with Dramatis Personae, which seems to be revealing a bit too much in its title, with the denizens of the station taking the roles of the various figures from the historical conflict. And I agree with Paul that this seems a little too early to do this sort of episode, but hey, it's something of a Trek tradition. This is not to say that I have not enjoyed your coverage of these episodes, which I have. But having never seen any of these episodes, the middle-of-the-road nature that they seem to possess does not push me to track them down. It is that quote-unquote first-season syndrome which genre shows have to work through to get to the meat-and-potatoes portion of their lifespan. The truly mind-blowing part of all of this is that The Forsaken, that had friggin' Loxana Troy in it, has ended up being one of the better ones of this run. Odo was always the most interesting member of the crew portion of the ensemble to me, so it does make sense that the episode which gives Rene Auberjonois a little room to work would be a better effort, despite the seemingly limited makeup appliances that he wears this season. Even Major Barrett sounded like she was better in this one, which is considering how poor most of her performances as Mama Troy are, that's saying something. Deep Space Nine, in my limited experience, works best when it does character pieces, where the unchanging scenery of the station can be put to good use. The Forsaken seems to be an episode which follows in this pattern. Anyway, very much looking forward to Duet, which was one of the few Season 1 episodes I saw originally when it aired. That is one of the absolute best was pretty good luck on my part. It's also the one which illustrates the point that I made earlier about taking advantage of your standing sets to do character work. Haven't seen the episode in 20 years, so very eager to hear your guys' take on it. Keep boldly going nowhere, and I'll keep listening, Luke. And Luke, of course, is the host of the Earth Destruction Directive, and he also co-hosts the Vault of Starling Monster Horror Tales of Terror over at 2TrueFreaks.com. Check those shows out. But do you guys have anything to say about Luke's email?
It does contain the magical phrase that every email should. I agree with Paul.
Well, I hope he liked what we said about Duet, because he felt it was one of the best ones, and so did we.
Yeah, I think we've got pretty much a consensus overall from all of our emailers and everyone we've seen on Facebook who's talked about Duet, saying that, yes, this is truly a superlative episode and deserves to be recognized as one of the greatest, not only Deep Space Nine episodes, but one of the greatest Star Trek episodes ever. So I'm glad that, you know,
there was somebody on Facebook who didn't like it.
Really?
I don't remember. I think it was Mark Campos, I think.
We may have to shun him.
We're not shunning any listeners. We have so few.
That's true. Well,
welcome all listeners.
Gene liked it, so that's all that matters, isn't it? No, actually, if there's someone who doesn't like the episode, you know, or didn't like the Duet episode, please write in. We'd love to hear, you know, what your feelings of it were, and, you know, how you came to disagree with us, because
I think if I remember the comment correctly, it wasn't that he didn't like it, it was just that he wasn't as high on it as we were.
Okay. Well,
that's similar to the debate we had on today's episode, where, you know, you guys aren't saying it's bad, it's just you don't think it's at the level that I think it's at.
Mm-hmm. And like I've said before many times, you know, it's having differing opinions is not a bad thing, so long as you're civil with how your companions' opinions are, and you're not denigrating them for having a different opinion, then it's completely fine. But that's email for Luke. Do we want to? Does someone want to get the next one?
Yeah, do you want me to get the next one?
Sure.
Hold on, let me just bring it up. Right, it's from Steve Rogers. I always like getting emails from Captain America. I bet he's never had that before.
I don't think he's ever heard that.
No one did.
He just listened to that then, and I bet he thought, of course, because like, I share the same name with Captain. Oh, no one's ever pointed that out to me.
Mm-hmm.
You just wonder if his parents knew that when they named him.
Probably not. But you never know. It'd be cool if he did. Steve emails in with Doctor Who DS9 comparison. Hey, guys.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but if my last name was Rogers and I had a son, I would name him Mister.
I'd call him Buck.
There you go.
Hey, guys. For some reason, this just hit me now. But I wonder how much the Time Lords influenced the idea of the Trill, especially the DS9 versions. It's essentially the same, where you have this old conscious of being constantly being reformed into a different host. Each time there are growing pains, spoilers, more so when a Trill host isn't ready for joining, but all of the experiences of past hosts stay with the symbiote, enhancing the next one. Now, here is where things get interesting, and very spoilery. How much did this influence Doctor Who many years after DS9 ended? In other words, the whole idea of memories of a host being locked away in the symbiote's memory, or whatever it was that suppressed Durham for all those years, compare that to John Hurt's The War Doctor, which technically is not part of the Doctor's official list of numbered regenerations. Granted, that was probably done because after 10 years, they didn't want to retcon the numbering since the relaunch of the show, but was a body that Paul McGann's Doctor regenerated into, and in turn, he regenerated into Christopher Eccleston, essentially part of the Doctor's hidden inside the Time Lord's consciousness. I'd imagine it's a coincidence, since something would have come out at some point either way, classic Who influencing Trek and DS9 influencing New Who, but it is an interesting comparison to think about, Steve.
Yeah, that is kind of interesting, you know, the idea of the Trill sort of sharing a consciousness or the memories of their prior host being akin to the Doctor or a Time Lord in general regenerating and having the experiences of the lifetimes that he've had before that. You know, it's an interesting comparison. I'll give it that.
Because we've also had the thing of Sisko having to get used to the old man having a new face,
mm-hmm.
which every one of the Doctor's companions who's been through a regeneration with him, they've all had that scene where they've had to get used to the new Who. So yeah, that is, I'd never even considered that, but that is quite an interesting parallel. Well done, Steve.
Yeah, the very, very clever. I enjoyed that email. Steve always comes up with really interesting things. Whenever he writes into, he's written into my show a couple of times, and he always points out things that I just completely would have glossed over. So that's a really good catch there, and a really interesting email, Steve. Thanks again.
I'm eternally grateful for Steve for actually getting the real Jimmy Permiati to say hello to me. So
awesome.
And then I also appreciate the thought that went into it, but I'm just, as a, you know, not real big Doctor Who guy, I don't have anything really to add to it. So, but I just don't want it to be thought that I'm somehow shunning that email.
Like you shunned our opinion of the episode, you mean?
Oh, did you have an opinion?
Wow.
I'm sorry, I must have missed when you mentioned it.
I completely blocked
I'm sorry,
that out.
I stopped listening when you talked.
I did hear a lot of blah 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 blah, but I don't know.
See,
we're like the teachers in Charlie Brown 2 years. Is that what you're saying?
Paul doesn't listen during the episode, and he doesn't listen after the episode airs. There you go. I am the only one who listens to it twice because I'm a raving egomaniac.
And Rachel.
And Rachel has to listen to it as well.
Yes, I have to listen to this drivel as well. Won't somebody pity the poor computer program that I am?
Sean's computerized wife.
Sean has to do this show with two raving unprofessionals. I do apologize.
I wouldn't have it any other way. Get out.
I'm sorry, I wasn't listening.
You have an email.
We got one more piece of email we might as well read before we totally just keep going down this hole. How Deep Space Nine Got My Hackles Up by Gene Hendricks. Paul, Sean, and Andy. Oh, no, it says Sean, Andy, and Paul.
No, yes.
Paul,
suck
Sean,
it, Paul.
And Andy, Gene.
Suck it.
We also
no,
accept
no, no, you're
Paul,
in, you're in
Sean.
The best place, though, Paul. You get the and.
Yeah,
I'll accept an ampersand. I don't want to end.
Actors fight for the and credit, dude.
Oh, that's because they're dumb. I went top billing, baby. Okay, let's lay it on the line here. I am a member of a minority religion, as listeners to my show know. So the idea of any one faith having the monopoly on truth is annoying to me. What I really have a problem with, though, is any religion butting into other people's lives, but especially into education. If you want to do stuff like that in your own home or in your church, temple, whatever, go for it. But if you come to my house or my daughter's school and try to tell me that science isn't right, we're going to have a problem. Therefore, as you can imagine, this episode really had me fuming through it. I think that really means that this episode succeeded, though, for a fiction character who was played brilliantly by Louise Fletcher to bring out that reaction in me means that it was well written and well acted. I can't say I loved it due to the subject matter, but I think it was really well done. As Andy said, the point of this was to get people talking about it, and the episode succeeds in that wonderfully. Gene. And I would agree with that, Gene. I think what you felt about it, and you may have felt it more intensely than some did, but I think that's the reaction they wanted. I think that's what the way they wanted you to look at it and say, oh my God, this woman is just such a zealot and unreasonable. And then I think as her character goes on, we learn that she's not even so much a zealot as power hungry and willing to do whatever she has to and willing to subvert her beliefs if it will get her more power.
Mm-hmm.
So I think she's meant to be a loathsome character and you know, you've seen through the layers right away.
Yeah. I can't disagree with you at all. I think Gene mentioned in his email that he couldn't say that he loved the episode. And I think this is one of those episodes where it's difficult to say that you love it because the subject matter and the characterizations are just so reviled and loathsome that it's saying that you love it is a difficult thing to do. But I think you can fall on the fact that the characterizations are so pure and are, you know, get you interested so viscerally into it that it becomes an incredibly entertaining episode. So, like I said, the seating of Louise Fletcher, she only gets better from here on out. And she started out amazing, so look what we have forward to.
I agree.
Okay.
So do I.
I think that's the first time I've said that today.
Andy, next time?
Next time on an all-new episode, not only does Susan Sarandon's brother Chris drop by the station, but so does Clark Kent's mum.
Wow, guest stars aplenty. Okay, well, I guess that's it. Do we have anything else before we head out?
Paul was wrong. This episode wasn't very good.
Oh, I was so right.
We'll see you next week then. Bye bye.
Bye everyone.
Take care, everybody. You know what's funny is I think I ended up bumping it up half a star just because we disagreed so much, and I felt like I had to.
That's gonna throw your grade point average off later on when you realize there are better ones.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
It's not about just one of the guys, it's about the other show I do, the Tangent one with Michael Bradley. We're trying to get people to do line reads for the opening intro, for the intro to the show. I was wondering if I could get you guys to do line reads, and we'll put them in at the beginning of the show and then credit you at the end, if you'd be willing to.
Yeah.
Don't care about being credited, and I don't, you know, it's fine.
Okay.
What do you want to do now?
Credits. That if there's money involved.
And there's no money involved, but there's...
All right, well,
would be, yes, we were going to pay everybody $200 each, but, well, you didn't want to be credited.
Let's see. There's the line. Basically, we've got, what's the song? We put it in at the beginning of, like, Radioactive.
Right, okay, I've heard what you guys do that.
And if you just, you guys want to read that...
Is this Andy's line, my line, or are we supposed to do this together?
You can do it separately or together or however you want to do it.
Well, I've only got one line.
Do you?
Tangents break off something from a line or train or thought and pursue another course. Webster's.
Yep, that's it.
That's the same line that I have.
Yeah.
All right. So we're doing a duet.
Well, you can do it separately or you can do it together. I don't, I'm just asking if you'd be willing to do it, and I appreciate you offering it up.
Yeah.
Okay. Go. Whoever wants to go first or whoever wants to go together. Damn it. Just.
why don't we do this 3 times, Andy? You do it, I'll do it, and then we'll do it together. And then Sean can pick which one he likes best.
Sure.
All right.
Thank you.
I'll go first. Tangent. To break off suddenly from a line or train of thought and pursue another course. Webster's.
Tangent. To break off suddenly from a line there.
I'm not using that one.
I think that's the one to go. I think that's the keeper. Tangent. To break off suddenly from a line or train of thought and pursue another course. Webster's. All right, you ready? We'll count down 3, 2, 1 and go.
Okay.
3, 2, 1, go. Tangent.
Tangent. To break off suddenly.
We're supposed to do it together.
We did do it together. I was with you.
You were echoing me.
Skype lag.
One more time. Yeah.
There may be lag. This may be hard to do together. 3, 2, 1, go.
Tangent.
To break off suddenly from a line or train of thought. And pursue another course.
Webster's.
No, that's terrible. You can't use that.
Yeah, that's...
You can't use that one.
No, I'll use the individual one.
We can't synchronize. I don't know why, but we can't.
It's probably just the Skype lag. I mean, you guys are... as good as Skype is, there's going to be a delay from New York to wherever you are near Manchester, Wigan, whatever. Is that the city?
Wherever the hell I am.
I know, somewhere in the England.
Somewhere in England.
Yes. All right. Here, since I'm having you do stupid things anyway, Andy, I've got another one of Sean's ridiculously stupid questions to ask you. Here we go. All right. Now, the English alphabet at the end of the alphabet, and here in America we call that letter Z. Over in the UK, you usually refer to it as Z. Right?
Yes.
Okay. What do you call the name of the band from the 1980s, the rock band, the guys with the long beards, play guitar, three-man band, do songs like Legs and Sharp Dressed Man.
Oh, I know what you mean. You mean ZZ Top.
Yes, is it ZZ Top over in the UK?
No, because they're American, so there's ZZ Top.
Okay. See, that was one of those things that was just confusing.
We are ZZ Top, and we're here to rock.
I was going to say.
1, 2, 3, 4.
You know, once they travel, if they toured over in England, would they have to tour as ZZ Top? I was just.
No, they would still be ZZ Top.
Okay. It was just one of those things. I was thinking, it just kind of.
These are the things you think about at work.
Yes, unfortunately, I get bored sometimes.
I wonder what ZZ Top are called in England.
It's no stupider than I can't remember what the last stupid thing that I asked you about.
Are
African Americans in England called something? Are they called African Europeans? So.
It's no more stupid than the bit in Pulp Fiction where they talk about the quarter pounder where the metric system is.
That is true. Yeah. So I'm basically channeling Quentin Tarantino right here and now.
Yeah. Yay. We should write all this dialogue down and turn it into a script.
No, Quentin Tarantino would love it.
Nobody else would.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I've got my, I've got my stupid, I'll think up another stupid question to ask you next time and we can.
And we should have
all new stupid questions.
We should make it part of the show.
And Paul, you crafty bugger, you posted. Nice.
What's that?
You posted bins while we were. You were so bored with the episode, you posted bins while we were.
You were so bored with the episode.
F*** this episode. I'm going to do something constructive.
Oh, so funny.